Welcome back to Random Trek, the podcast in which I, your host, Scott McNulty, discuss a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. My guest today, or tonight, depending on your time zone, we are in two separate time zones, is Anne Zander. Anne, thank you for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited.
I'm excited as well. So tell the people a little bit of... Tell the people a little bit about yourself. That's how excited I am. I can't speak.
I feel the excitement too. I am an actor and a writer and comedian, and I live in London, originally from near Portland. A Star Trek fan, obviously, since I volunteered myself to be on the show. I don't know what else to say about myself. You probably haven't seen me in anything unless you live in London or Algeria, because I was in a French-Algerian film that had a pretty wide release there. So.
Oh, well, there you go. You are famous in Algeria.
That's right.
Let's pivot to Star Trek. Now, you've already said you're a fan, so I don't need to ask that standard question, but I will ask this question. If you had to, you may have, you know what I'm going to ask you.
I think I know, and I'm nervous because I don't know if I can answer.
Oh, well, I'm going to ask and we'll find out together.
Okay.
If you had to pick one, and you do, because I'm asking you, although you can cheat as many people do, which series of Star Trek would you pick as your favorite Star Trek series?
Yeah, I was right, about your question. I've been thinking a lot about this because I knew you were going to ask. And I think I'm sort of relatively new Star Trek fan. I only started kind of watching it all back again a couple of years ago because I watched it a lot. I watched Next Gen a lot with my dad when I was a kid.
Uh-huh.
And so, like, for nostalgia factor, I feel like Next Gen is really strong. Mm-hmm. But Deep Space Nine, as you've often discussed, has, you know, I think kind of the strongest overall storyline and the fewest really painful to watch episodes.
Although it does have painful to watch episodes.
Yes, but Voyager is also a really close contender for me, which I only sort of watched for the first time like in the last year or so. But I love especially the kind of trifecta of women that you get once Seven of Nine joins the crew. So it's really hard. I can't quite choose, but it's definitely down to those three.
Well, you know, that's 3 out of 5 that you
have. Yeah, I know.
So original series at Enterprise, not even on the table.
I am in the midst of watching. I do like the original series. I had to kind of, I think watching it, retrospectively worked better for me than starting with the original series and going forward kind of chronologically. I can really appreciate, especially the first season, I think, but there's just, for me, especially as a woman, there's so many moments that are so cringy and so sexist.
Yes.
As there are in Next Gen and in certainly in Enterprise.
Oh, Enterprise.
As I've been slowly making my way through Enterprise. I don't think they kind of hold the same place for me.
Yeah, I mean, and as a man who is watching the original series in 2017, it is also has many cringe-worthy sexist moments, which, you know, then you just think, well, it was a different time, I guess. Everybody
had... Yeah, but it was a different time, but those women still had feelings and, you know,
they're still people, so.
That were being...
And it was and I've said this before, but it's amazing to look back at the original series with, you know, our lens, our contemporary lens, and think that, wow, this show is pretty darn sexist. But at the time, it was so kind of progressive and groundbreaking with women's roles, and that makes you really think, that time was not so great for women.
Yeah. May I make off on one brief tangent?
Sure.
Because I didn't know until I started watching it recently that the pilot episode featured like a completely different crew.
Yes.
And I don't actually know the story behind that, but I thought it was so interesting because in the pilot you have a female first officer, all the like men and women are all wearing the same uniforms essentially, which are not tight fitting or revealing particularly. And I I was like, oh, this is interesting. And then, you know, there's an episode later where they kind of were like, go back and reintegrate that first episode. I don't know the title, but, you know, where they find
Captain.
Yes. But I was like, oh, that's so interesting that it seems like they tried to make something that was a little bit less like sexy, kind of exploitative of women. And then somebody clearly was like, no, put them all in short skirts.
Well, I think that, yeah, there was. So it was interesting. The first officer was played by Majel Barrett, who was married to Gene Roddenberry. I don't know if they were married at the time. And of course, plays Loxana Troi and the voice of the computer. So she has a through all of the series. But yeah, I don't know. I think they didn't like the actor who played Christopher Pike, and they didn't
which
think
is why they made him super, super, like, unable to do anything when they brought him back.
Exactly. They, like, put him in a cube that can roll around. So they had to recast, and then they moved Spock into the... Because Spock was in the pilot as well.
Yes, but he was, yeah.
He looked a little more satanic, kind of, or demonic, I should say. Because I think the first, they were thinking he would be Martian, which was odd. So he had a red hue, and he had those very arched eyebrows. But then they kind of reconfigured everything and got some short skirts and threw in Uhura, which I think is a good addition, although gave her very little to do.
Yeah, as the communications officer.
Yes, she answers the phone and hands it to somebody else. But yeah, so luckily, or perhaps not luckily, the random Trek generator did not assign us an original series episode. It, in fact, assigned us your nostalgic favorite, TNG.
Yes.
Which is also my nostalgic favorite.
Yay.
And this episode, I remembered vaguely, when I watched it, I remembered it very well. Funny how that works. So it's
same. I was like, this is a weird one.
Yes. This one is season 5, episode 15, Power Play, or the one where people go crazy and try to take over the Enterprise.
Yeah, where everybody but the person with a broken arm is
that's right.
Interesting. Taken over by an alien force.
I did think that was interesting, but we'll get to that. So let's talk about TNG first before we jump into this episode.
Cool.
Because this episode is, I don't know if it's, well, it's a pretty kind of standard TNG episode. And spoiler alert, I do like this episode. So
yeah,
we could talk about whether or not you like it, but... So if you had to pick now I'm going to ask you my pick your favorite character from TNG question.
Ooh, okay. Specific.
Specific. Or a couple. Or, you know, 75% of the crew, if you like.
Well, it's interesting because actually Ro Laren is one of my favorite TNG characters, and she's not in it very much. You know, she's just in... She's in season 5 and then comes back a little bit in 6 and 7, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But I really like her as a strong female character and somebody who's just really sort of self-assured and obviously kind of integrates back into Starfleet after coming back for the one-off mission in Ensign Row. But you get that sense that she's not afraid to speak up and to sort of... You see in this episode that she makes a lot of the suggestions that lead them to solving the problem of this episode. So she's a big favorite. And actually Guinan is probably my other favorite.
Oh.
Yeah, which is funny because, again, these are like not very... She's not featured very much, but I wish she was. There's actually a woman, I'm not going to remember her name right now, Aliza something, who's trying to create a spin-off series about Guinan's backstory.
Oh, that would be interesting.
Called Spectral Awakening. Just a little plug. But
check that out.
I'm super interested in that because I think she's, she's like a really underused and fascinating character as well.
All right, well, let's get into this episode then. So this episode, I like this episode for many reasons. The biggest one, though, is that I like any episode, and this is why I like the Borg a lot, that take something that's familiar and make it unfamiliar, and then so it's kind of super creepy. So there are episodes where the Enterprise is kind of reconfigured, so it's vaguely similar. You recognize it, but it's very different. And in this episode, three of our main characters are taken over by aliens, and so they are acting very differently, and yet they look exactly like Troy, Miles, and Data. And so it's kind of like, whoa, what's going on here?
And it's also just cool to get to see, is it Marina Sirtis who plays
Troy? Yes.
Troy? Mm-hmm. Yeah. To actually get to see her
do something.
Do stuff.
Yes.
It's unfortunate that she has to be embodied by a male character.
Yes, I thought that was interesting.
But it's still nice to be able to be like, oh, yes, she can do things if given the chance.
Yeah, I mean, Counselor Troy, I don't have strong feelings about Counselor Troy because they never really do anything with Counselor Troy. So it's kind of like, why is she even on the show? You're kind of wasting her. And she's a good actress, so I don't understand why they didn't give her more to do. She kind of just shows up and she's like, oh, people are afraid. And everyone's like, we didn't need
to
have mind powers.
Because sexist male writers.
What? But in the 24th century, there is no sexism.
I know, exactly. But do you want to come back to my room later?
But in this episode, she gets stuff to do, although she is, I would have thought it would be better, and it wouldn't even change anything in the script, in the story, if they had just made the captain of the Essex, or actually this criminal that takes over her body.
Right.
A woman.
And
then it would have been fine. She wouldn't have changed anything. She could act the same way. She could do, it would just been like, oh, that's nice.
Although she does a really nice job. I think all of them do, but particularly her, of like changing her, you know, vocal intonations and levels and physicality.
Yes.
So, she does a really nice job of being like, I am a different character now, which is cool. You know, it's cool to see her transformed.
Because Counselor Troy, I wouldn't say she is meek, but she's kind of in the background, so she kind of just blends in. I think the perfect part of this is they take the shuttlecraft. I guess we should explain. They find this planet
that has
a bunch of a wacky ion storm going all over the place, and Captain Picard's like, well, I guess we should leave. And they have a distress call that Data identifies being from like a 160-year-old ship, and Captain Picard's like, well, it's dangerous to go down there. I guess we've solved the mystery. Let's go. Which is something that Captain Kirk never would have done. He would have been like, let's go down there and check it out.
Yeah.
Which they, in fact, do end up doing, because Counselor Troy says, oh, I sense something. There's someone living down there.
Someone's down there, alive.
And everyone's like, really?
She does a very slow entrance onto the bridge throughout the opening scene.
She does.
You watch her, like, walk in the background.
She creeps up. It was very strange.
As Riker has his leg up on Data's chair,
his console, I don't understand why he does that, but it seems inappropriate.
Yes.
Put your leg down, Riker. And so I will say that she says that, and everybody just says, okay.
Yeah.
We believe you. Let's do this thing.
They do, yes.
Which is good. And then it turns out, so they decide, okay, we need to send some people down there. Let's send, Data, Riker, and Troy. Go ahead.
Right. Sure, why not?
Seems like that's all you need. I don't know, maybe like a security guy go with them, but what do I know? I'm not in charge of away missions. So they go down there, and the scene that I think kind of sums up how Troy kind of melts into the background, literally, is that they show this kind of shuttlecraft scene. Data and Riker are doing stuff, and Troy talking.
Yeah.
And Troy's just kind of sitting in the back, holding on for dear life.
Looking terrified.
Yes.
I mean, I would also be terrified if my shuttlecraft was going to crash, but like, she's literally just making this face like, oh, as everybody else, as Riker and Data are like actually doing things to try to, you know, change the situation or save them, basically.
Yes, she's just like, what's going on, guys? Where's
the
seatbelt?
And I was like, why is she there? Because she's the one who
sensed
heard
them?
I was going to say heard the voice. Yeah, like sensed there.
Heard the voice, whatever.
I
don't know what she gets. No, I don't know if it's a sound or an impulse or something.
Yeah.
I guess, but because the planet, they make it pretty clear that the planet screws up sensors and transporters.
Yeah.
So I guess she's basically like the bloodhound that they're going to use to find these people.
Also, the shuttlecraft shot, because I've been watching later – like, I've been watching later series, and Enterprise, for all its faults, has, you know, better special effects.
Oh, by far.
In a lot of cases. Mm-hmm. And the shuttlecraft scene is so bad. It's just so clearly them just, like, shaking around in a little box on the set. And then at the end, the camera does, like, a full 360 spin.
And they don't fall out of their seats or anything. And you're like, they're not even wearing seatbelts. What's going on?
Oh, they are, though, actually. Oh, are they?
Well, there you go.
I noted that they're wearing seatbelts, yes.
See, good job.
I thought, that's interesting that they're wearing, they got seatbelts on the shuttlecraft, but not anywhere on, like, the main ship.
And they do take, I did question, they took, like, the tiniest shuttlecraft they could find.
Yes!
I don't know. There's I know you have bigger shuttlecrafts on the Enterprise. Maybe take a beefier one, but all right.
Yeah.
But yeah, so they crash, and there's an exciting scene where the hatch explodes so they can get out, which I liked. I don't know why I liked it. I just did.
I didn't even notice that. So, oh, yeah, there you go.
It's exciting. It's like 2 seconds, but it's exciting. And then they're out there like, OMG, we're stuck. There's no sign of a wreckage because they think that this ship has crash landed.
Oh, yeah. And also the only injury is Riker. Yes.
Riker broke his arm.
Oh, sorry. Somebody's
you're popular.
At my doorbell for some reason.
Oh, all right. Go check it out.
Do you mind if... Sorry.
No.
Sorry. Oh, I think my husband's taking care of it.
Oh, all right.
Anyway, sorry. All right. A bit of background noise there.
That's okay.
But yeah, no, they come out of the shuttlecraft, and Deanna, everybody's fine. And Deanna's like, "Your arm." And Riker goes, "Yeah, pretty sure that's broken." Like, he's just
let's carry on. I've had, and he says later, that wasn't the only bone I've broken.
Yeah, exactly. It's not the first broken bone I've had.
I'm tough. Let's go.
Exactly.
Now, I have never broken any bones, but I feel like he would be in a lot of pain.
Do you know what? I haven't, but I've, like, sprained things, and it's painful. You know? Like, I've just... Yeah, I just didn't buy it.
No,
he the broken arm.
Riker basically just kind of holds his shoulder, and he's like, "Yep, my arm's broken. Let's go."
Yeah, he holds his arm still. It's like, this is the indication that it is broken.
Yep, and so they can't find anything, and a storm is coming. Oh no!
Yes.
And Troy is like, "I still sense something, as if they're on the wind, in the wind, or something." And everyone's like, "We don't understand what you're talking about." And everyone on the ship is trying to figure out how to get them back up. The storm is thwarting all efforts, except good old Miles O'Brien.
But thanks to Ensign Row, they know where they are. Oh, she's the one who tracked their...
Yes, she was paying attention.
Tracked their descent.
Unlike everybody else, apparently. Yep. So she could plot where they crash-landed, and this is kind of like B characters team up, because Ensign Row finds them, and then Miles O'Brien figures out how to beam down.
Yep.
And I call them B characters only because they're recurring characters, but not part of the main cast. I like both of them.
Totally.
Miles O'Brien is a great character. And so he beams down with some transporter enhancer, pattern enhancers.
Something. So a triangle.
A triangle. He beams down with everybody, a triangle. You need to stand in the triangle, people. he sets them up, and everyone's happy to see him. But oh no, just as he's about to set them up, or finish the last one. This arc of light, or not light, what is it, like electricity?
It's like lightning or something.
Yeah, knocks them all out.
Yeah, but it only hits O'Brien, it seems like, but it knocks them all out. And also, right before that, we get some heavy foreshadowing where O'Brien's like, "I gotta get back to feed Molly.
That's right.
Or she'll be really upset."
That's right. I have to feed her lunch.
Yeah, I have to feed her lunch or
Remember,
she'll be upset.
I have a kid, right?
And then Riker's like, "Time to go feed Molly." But like, how many times can you mention that there's going to be some kind of tension with your daughter later on?
That's right. Don't forget, Molly is an infant that Miles O'Brien loves. And so they get knocked out, and you think, uh-oh, something bad's going to happen. And then even worse, we see the kind of Star Trek special of energy orbs glowing around and looking for a host. And they find 4 unconscious bodies, so they jump in. But I guess the one that goes into Riker's like, "Screw this noise, he's got a broken arm.
I'm
out of here."
I was just like, when I saw it, I was like, is it because his broken arm, or is it because he woke up too quickly? Like, what's...
It is very unclear why they don't take over Riker. But they don't. Maybe they don't like his beard. Who knows?
Yeah. Maybe they know he's sexist.
Maybe they do. And they're like, I don't want to pretend. I don't even want to pretend to be sexist. Because I did watch this episode, and I did remember, you know, many moons ago when it was first on, I remembered one of them wasn't taken over. And so when this happened, I was like, oh, it's probably going to be Data because he's an android.
And yeah, and not, that would make the most sense.
Right, but no, it's Riker for whatever reason. So they're taken over. Well, we don't know they're taken over, but if you've watched any episode of Star Trek before watching this episode, you're pretty certain that they have now been taken over by hostile aliens. They beam up. They're saved. Hooray. They go about their time, go about, you know, doing their jobs, but very quickly.
But the only one who wakes up screaming is Deanna Troi.
Yes.
I just want to point that out.
That is true.
Everybody else is sort of fine, but Deanna Troi can't be, like, have a... I was like, why does she wake up screaming? If she's already been taken over by the alien, surely she just... I don't know, unless it's some kind of conflict with her kind of empathic self and she feels the split.
That's kind of what I took it as, but I also did think it was an odd choice. Because there's nothing – I would have expected – if that's what they were doing, I would have expected her to at least kind of fight back a little bit throughout the takeover, which would have made sense and perhaps would have been interesting, but she doesn't.
And I also think it just would have been way creepier if, because they do that tight shot of her eyelid opening, if it just opened and she just sat up completely calmly. I think that would have been way more effective than her waking up screaming. It is silly.
Or maybe her eyes snapped open and she had a little smile and then she just stood up.
Yeah, exactly.
She screams and knocks over something, I think, as well.
Yeah, of course. And Dr. Crusher calms her down. But
she's like, what's wrong? Calm down. Yeah. You're fine. And now you're going to have to pick that up, Deanna. and so they go off, and you think, well, maybe everything's fine, because they seem to be okay. Although we focus on Data, and Data's kind of, you know, smirking, and you think Data doesn't normally smirk.
Yeah, and then he has a little glitch in the turbo lift.
which I liked, and everyone's like, are you all right, Data? And he's like, I'm fine.
and they also have like a little knowing glance between them before they leave the turbo lift.
And then Data's like, okay, well, I think we need to scan this planet. And Riker's like, yep, let's start at the crash landing sites, because that makes sense, which, in fact, it does. And Data's like, well, maybe we should start at the South Pole. And Riker's like, no, we'll start at the landing site. Yeah. And if then we can go at to the South Pole. And Data's like, okay. And then this is when we know something's up, because Data locks everybody out and he decides that they are, in fact, going to start at the South Pole. And Riker's like, what the heck, Data? And Data punches Riker.
Yeah, and again, Ro Lauren is the one who alerts everybody to the situation. She's like, have you locked me out, Riker?
And Riker's like, why would I do that?
Yeah, exactly.
And everyone's like, that's why I asked.
Yeah.
And it turns out Data, and he punches Riker. And then...
Data punch!
It is quite a forceful punch. Yeah, he's a strong guy, that Data. Also a strong guy.
Worf. I also wondered, because then shortly after, O'Brien like throws Worf over the security con, and I was like, does the alien make O'Brien super strong? Because I feel like he wouldn't normally be able to. Like, Data is really strong, but is the alien somehow making them super strong? Because I feel like Worf would not be so easily thrown.
I feel like normally in a fight between O'Brien and Worf, I would put my money on Worf.
Yes.
But O'Brien very quickly dispatches him and dramatically throws him over the command bridge thingy.
The security bit.
Whatever
thing
it
at the
is.
Back, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm assuming, I guess, he got super strength from the alien.
Or maybe Worf is just really taken off guard.
That's right.
Because he's aiming at Data. He's
about to shoot Data, and he gets tossed. And I do like, so Troi has gone to the Captain Picard's ready room, and they're talking about whatever they're talking about. And Picard's like, that's very interesting. Let me ponder and turn my back to you because I completely trust you. And Troi does the good old Captain Kirk dual-fisted chop.
Yeah, I wrote Deanna chop.
Yes.
Yeah, chop.
And knocks Captain Picard right out.
Again, super strength.
Yes. And then that's when, you know, now we know they've been taken over by something. And they want to go to the South Pole. And I don't know why, but that's what they want.
Yeah.
But we do know later they want to spring the rest of these people out.
Yes.
And so they decide they get locked out of the things, right?
Yeah, the con. Yeah, and at which point Data punches the, and I was like, how does that glass not break? Which comes back later because he does punch some glass and break it.
Breaks,
but he like
yes.
punches it like three times really hard because he's mad that he's been locked out.
Yes,
but
Riker.
It doesn't break.
It doesn't break, and he gets out of there because he's like, this, yeah. screw this, let's go to engineering. Or where they go to a transporter, they go somewhere because they get locked out.
They go to the turbo lift, I think.
Right, and then they
yeah,
because they're all
they
three of them
stuck a
are
bit,
the
yeah.
turbo lift. Worf stops the turbo lift. O'Brien's like, I got this, guys. I know how to override the override.
Sure,
because why not? And he does.
Starfleet security
is very very bad. and then they put in you know they start the force fields so they get out of the turbo lift, but they can't go anywhere because of the force fields. Except this is when Data says, "Wait a second. My artificial body can help," and he yeah. smashes using much less strength, actually, than when he smashed
yeah, the punch.
and shatters the glass, and the force fields come down, and they make their way to 10 forward for some reason.
Just maybe they're hungry.
They're hungry. They want to see if Guinan's on
yeah,
shift.
Just like, damn it. He would listen to us.
That's right. None of you will listen. People are chilling, hanging out in 10 forward, as you do. And Keiko O'Brien and Molly, who is super
yeah,
cute baby,
is
crying.
As foreshadowed. She's upset.
She's upset. She's crying. Everybody else in 10 forward is like, sheesh, can't you make that baby get quiet? and now it's a hostage situation. Because they stun a bunch of people, they send security, that doesn't work. Worf goes down there and he is once again thwarted by these aliens. Now we've got a hostage situation.
Yeah.
And they are, the crew has to figure out how can we save, these people. So they've got, Dr. Crusher working on some kind of stasis fieldy thing.
Yeah, it's a super awesome, team because Dr. Crusher, like, solves the mystery of, mm-hmm. of what, basically of what's going on. She's the one who's like, I think they've been taken over by an alien. Ro Laren comes up with the plasma shock. Mm-hmm. Geordi executes it. You know, like it's like two women and a man of color who are like yep. solving the situation, which is awesome.
And Captain Picard saying, make it so.
Yeah. Captain Picard is like, yes. Oh yes. That do that.
Yeah,
that's
do that.
Your top priority.
That sounds good.
yeah.
And I'll try to negotiate with them.
Yeah. Which he does well.
Which he does. And he taking a leadership role, is like, okay, you've got hostages, and there's a lot of injured people there. Mm-hmm. If I, as the captain of the ship, become your hostage, will you let the medical crew come in and take away the injured people at the very least?
Yeah.
And so they're like, okay. And so they do that. And it is interesting because they have the aliens have taken over the bodies of Troy, Data, and O'Brien. And it seems like they have access to their memories. Maybe not all of them. I don't know. There's some weird scenes where O'Brien is looking at Keiko and he's like, I know you.
Yeah. I mean, it's like super effective at being creepy.
It is very creepy.
You know, she, and I think like, I can't remember the actress's name at the moment who plays Keiko, but she's does really great throughout this episode of being, you know, cause he first comes in and she's like, what are you, you know, kind of like, right. what are you doing?
WTF
and he tells her
Miles.
To get on the ground. And she's like, responding as you would if your husband was suddenly like holding everyone in a room, including yourself yeah. and your child hostage.
Yes, it would be
but yeah,
stressful.
He does. He says he refers to the baby as it. He's like, mm-hmm. I know what this is.
Yes.
You know, and it's,
but
yeah.
It,
and it's
seems
super creepy.
Like he comes, he gets access to these memories over time because he's like, oh, I remember giving you this bracelet.
Yeah.
Which
it gets, I mean, it's effective, but it also kind of does this kind of Star Trek-y tropey thing where it's like, let's try, like, make the woman a victim of, you know, a near assault mm-hmm. where he gets, it's really creepy. I mean, it's
very
effective.
Creepy.
Yeah. But it's like, you know, he's basically tries to kiss her at a certain point as
yes.
he's saying all these creepy things. And she's like, get off me, get away from me,
she's
leave
like,
us alone.
No way, Jose.
Which is the right response.
Yes. Because it's not, yeah. it's Miles, his body, but it's not actually Miles.
Oh yeah. She knows that it's not him. Yeah.
Which is something Keiko should be used to because the writers do so many horrible things to O'Brien. So.
Yeah. And I think it's, I can't remember if it's in this season or next season where there's Rascals where she gets turned into a child
mm-hmm.
and then it's sort of like, O'Brien has to deal with the fact that his wife is a child, which is so creepy.
Very creepy. The yeah. O'Briens are not treated well in Star Trek. No. But I like them a lot because they're really good. But yeah. But I bring that up because Data seems to be like, you know, don't talk to Picard. He's just going to try and tuck you out of this, and he's clever. And so he has these memories that he's accessed, that they know Picard is a good negotiator and he's a smooth talker. And that he's basically, he gets there, they let out the harmed prisoners, and Picard finds out that, well, at least Deanna and the other two claim that they are, in fact, officers from the Essex, which was the ship that has been, and that's like, oh, well, dun dun sure. dun, and cut to commercial.
Yeah, exactly.
And then you're like, well, that's super interesting. And then Worf and Captain Picard later have this talk, and Worf is like,
they have a ghosty conversation.
They do. And Worf is like, well, gee, they're Starfleet officers. That's wacky. Why aren't they being nicer? And Captain Picard's like, I don't believe it for a second. And Worf is like, what?
Worf is like, but
said so.
Klingon history says that it happens.
That's right. There are ghosts in Klingon history. It must be true.
Yeah.
Captain Picard's like, human history has lots of ghost stories too, but they are all rubbish.
Yeah. exactly.
Like, you go, Captain Picard, because it's clearly not true. And he's like, okay, we need to figure out how to. And he's basically stalling while Ro and LaForge are creeping up the Drefreeze tubes to position an awkwardly shaped sensor / field emitter, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. Drill a little hole in the ceiling.
Tiny one. Check them out.
To get all three of them in this circle.
And yes, they
to be able to shoot them.
That's right. They do that. It doesn't work. It's working, but one of the, I think Data maybe is not
Data
quite in it.
Data steps out, yeah.
And so
they
he's
miss
like,
Data.
He chokes Picard. Picard tells him to stop. And then they get locked out of their, the stuff. No, they kind of negotiate and they say, okay, we need to go to a shuttle bay 4. I think Picard suggests this.
Cargo bay 4.
And you can use the transporter there. We'll go to the South Pole like you want, and you can do what you want. Just let these people go. And they say, okay, but we need to take some prisoners with us. So we'll take Deanna chooses Picard. O'Brien chooses Keiko, of course. And Data says, ooh, the Klingon. And
the
runs
Klingon.
Off.
He keeps calling him the Klingon throughout the episode. Like, he doesn't remember his name. It's weird.
Yes. And Data also wants to fight Worf at one point, which is interesting. And so off they go to the cargo bay. And this is when, you know, Picard tells, you know, Riker, I think we have a great opportunity.
Wink.
That's right. To resolve this situation. If you know what I'm saying, Riker.
nudge.
That's right. And so they go there. And this is when it turns out, in fact, that they are not officers of Starfleet who have gone crazy, living in ionic clouds for 150 years, but rather
what?
Prisoners who have been sent to this penal colony.
Right.
And they've gone even crazier because they've been living there for 500 years. And they tried to take over the Essex, but it didn't work because it couldn't escape, I guess, the
ship wasn't powerful enough to break through the storm, I think.
So not only are they guilty of whatever crimes they were that sent them here, but they also killed the entire crew of the Essex in their escape.
Yep.
And this is when Picard's like, well, we can't let this happen again, but they beam up kind of a shaft full of glittery convicts, I guess.
Yeah.
Who are eager to inhabit the rest of the bodies of the Enterprise and skedaddle. Yeah. But this is when Captain Picard is like, you know, do it. And Dr. Crusher starts her stasis field.
but before that, Riker says to Ro, he's there's only one reason he would have chosen Cargo Bay 4. Mm-hmm. If it comes down to it, he'll open that door and basically sacrifice all of them and suck them all into space if need be.
Yes, and another good Row moment is, you know, they say, okay, transfer all the transporter controls to us. And so they do, and then O'Brien's like, I said all transporter controls.
And Row's like, dang it.
She's like, darn it. And Riker's like, it was a good idea.
Yeah.
But it didn't work. So they get there. They the stasis field works. And Captain Picard basically says, you know, I'm not going to let you take my ship. And Deanna's like, well, we're just going to kill everybody then, kill you. And, because he says, oh, I'll open the hatch and we'll all die. And she says, but then you will die along with us. And he's like, well,
Yeah. And Keiko's like, I would gladly die for my child. And Worf is like, defending the ship is the best possible way.
Worf is basically like, I really want to die. So there's no problem there. And Picard's like, of course, I will put down my life to save the ship. And I think you know the officers that you've inhabited that they would give their lives. So, you know, it's your choice. To which I would think that the aliens, convict aliens, just out of spite, would be like, well, if we're going to die, you have to die as well.
Yeah, totally. Like, I don't know. It feels like if I were them, I would choose death over another, you know, five centuries in that.
Oh, just that floating place. Around. Yeah. But that would make this a very different episode because lots of the main characters would suddenly die.
Yeah, exactly.
So they decide, okay, we'll leave these bodies and head back down to our eternal spooky prison. And off they go. People arrive to make sure that everybody's okay. The medical team comes, and then we have basically it ends with Keiko and O'Brien reuniting, and we get
such a weird scene. It's such a weird scene. It's a classic example of Star Trek where they're like, especially with women, where they're like, this woman has been horrifically traumatized, and now she's fine. Like,
she's happy.
She would, I mean, he's, you know, he's like, I mean, to be fair, Miles is like, how are you? Or how are you okay? And she's like, I'm just glad to have you back. I'm like, she would need serious therapy after something like this.
Yes. Like and he apologizes. He's like, I'm sorry. Because he could, the other thing was they kind of were riding along, so they couldn't control their bodies, which is even more horrific, right? Yeah, so they were watching this, and you can imagine all of them being like, oh my gosh, I can't believe we're doing this. I can't stop it. Especially O'Brien. So he's like, gee, that was awkward, huh? Sorry about that.
Yeah, and he does say, like, if I would have killed that thing, I would have. And she's like, I know. We both know. Woohoo! And there's, like, a close cut of Molly's face.
Right. We just kind of zoom in, like, Looney Tunes style to Molly's face, and it ends. And I will say, Molly, the baby that's playing Molly, is super cute. But
she is super cute. It's true.
It was kind of an odd choice, I thought.
Yeah.
And that's it.
I agree.
All is as it was at the beginning of the episode, as no happens so much in TNG. Everybody's fine.
Yeah.
They don't even like put out a buoy that says this is a prison planet.
True, exactly. Yeah. Like, stay away from this part of space.
That's right.
Yeah.
Now, of course, listening to this, you might think that I did not like this episode because I have said so many horrible things about it. But I will say I did really like it because of, you know, Troy and Data and O'Brien and the actors, like you mentioned earlier, and they really change the way they act and how they hold themselves, and especially Troy. So it's like these are familiar characters that we know, but they're acting in very different ways because they are, in fact, inhabited by different people. So that was very interesting.
Yeah. I think I overall liked it. I thought, like, you know, there were times, there was a time in the middle when they were just in the 10 forward and like, Schumer, Troy, whoever, you know, was like giving the fake backstory of who they were. And I was like, okay, this is really boring. Like, this is like, you've kind of lost the tension here with your sort of expositional backstory. But overall I thought it was like, like I said, it was a really cool episode. With a lot of women leading, it definitely passes the Bechdel test. I, as I said before, I really wish Guinan had been in it because I just feel like it's her home turf. That would have been cool. But overall, I liked it. I just want to say one more thing about Ro, if that's okay.
Perfect. We can talk all you want about Ro.
Which is, I hadn't gone back. So I watched TNG straight through and then I watched DS9 and I hadn't gone back and looked at this. She's the first, I believe she's the first Bajoran that we see. And her makeup is, like, different. It looks like the medical symbol. You know, the thing with, like, the wings and the two snakes wrapped around it? Like, mm-hmm. It's a lot more elaborate than what they do later on.
Yes.
And I just thought that was interesting because then I kind of went down a little bit of
a Bajoran rabbit
hole. Yeah, / a Bajoran rabbit hole. And she also wears her earring on the left side, which is like the Paw Wraith cult side. I was like, oh, no, don't do it, Ro.
Well, at that point, who knew what the pod race was going to be?
I mean, it was before all that happened, but I was just like, and I watched in Ensign Ro, she, even with they interact with other Bajorans, she's the only one who's wearing it on the left side, so...
She's always been a fan of the Paw Wraith.
I don't know. I hope not.
Maybe she has a reason. Yeah. She's rebelling against her own culture.
Yeah, I mean, she is a rebel at heart. But exactly. I also wanted to say that one thing I really like about Star Trek, and from a fan perspective and from an actor's perspective, is that they recycle a lot of cast. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, which I just think is fun. And it also, like, I think as an actor would be really fun because... You know, you get to come back on this show and play lots of different characters. It's kind of like repertory theater or something where, mm-hmm. you know, you're in lots of different things. And I didn't realize, but Michelle Forbes was on an earlier TNG episode where she played, I don't know, the daughter of a guy who was supposed to commit ritual suicide. Somebody, I think, Luoxana Troy was actually dating.
But, that's right. Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah. So anyway, I hadn't realized until I went on the Memory Alpha that she'd been on before and they liked her and asked her back. And I thought that was a good decision because I think she's great. She's a great character. But I thought the evolution of the makeup was interesting too, that by the time she comes back in season 7, she just has the nose ridges. So maybe they couldn't get the original makeup artist back. I don't know.
Well, I think that was also Deep Space Nine was on, and so they were like, "Oh, we have to do so much of course, this yeah. makeup."
that yeah, we can't give everybody this like elaborate sort of
right,
twisted.
Let's simplify wing it.
Thing. Yeah.
So that I think that was it. But I think Ensign Ro, thumbs up on Ensign Ro, and in this episode she has a small but critical part. So that's exciting. And thumbs up to Miles O'Brien for being once again tortured, but doing God, it in yeah. a good way. Poor Miles.
They really just love to make him suffer.
They do. But he does it so well. I think it's Cole Meany's fault because yeah. he plays a suffering Irishman so well.
He does.
Well, Anne, thank you so much for joining me.
Oh my goodness, it was so fun. Yeah, thank you so much for having me. And if you ever need somebody again, please give me a call.
Oh, well, I still have something like 500 episodes to get through, so expect that call.